Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
I tell you, Mountain Dew created a freaking Mountain Dew universe, cinematic beverage universe, this damn point. They have legends.
Cinematic universe.
Yeah, may as well. I mean, they could have a whole thing where they have a bunch of superheroes named after the different sodas without mentioning the actual term Mountain Dew. I'm Code Red. I'm Pitch Black. I'm Pitch Black 2, the sidekick. And then this is fucking Live Wire. What were some other ones they had? Baja Blast. You're telling me they couldn't do a superhero cinema series
where
all the heroes were named after Mountain Dew? They absolutely could.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, and I guess this is technically the second half of our anniversary spectacular week. Last episode was before the anniversary. This is right after the anniversary. So, hey, Chris and Pernell are here. How are you two doing?
Doing half great.
Grooving and grooving.
Pernell, you weren't here for the anniversary. What do you think?
Oh, you made it to the anniversary. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Did you hear about the giveaway?
There's a lot of games being given away, but did you announce who's getting them yet?
No, not yet. That's in 2 weeks.
There you go. In that case, I am caught up. Yes, there's a lot of games.
There are a lot of games. There are over 100 games that you can enter to win. The grand prize gets up to 50 of them, including from our special guest joining us today, David Ventura of Ichigo Ichie, who donated a copy of Hexagroove to the giveaway. David, how are you doing?
I am doing just grand. Thank you for asking.
That was a segue right there. I was like, hey, wait a minute. This is going somewhere.
Yeah.
It's going somewhere specific.
I planned that one. I thought that one out.
It was almost scripted. Yeah.
I almost wrote it down, but then I was like, I got to find a notepad. And then I just hit that wall.
Yeah. It's always better when you wing it anyway. No one's got time for notes.
So, David, how are you doing? How's things been?
It's been going well. Thank you. We've been super, super busy and we are just only a couple months away, I guess. Yeah, 6 weeks away or so from the end of this development period.
Yes,
wild journey.
Last time you were on the show, we were chatting about Backbeat, your newest puzzle rhythm hybrid. It is now coming to Switch and PS5. Coming out in March.
PS4. Yeah.
And PS4 coming out March?
That's right.
Tell us what's going on with that. What's the story with bringing it to console?
Well, this is our second game of the studio. And when we started it out, you know, we had all these ambitions that we wanted to knock off, all these things that we couldn't do the first time around. And we're like, this time we want to have a story. We want to have characters. And then while we were making it, we're like, this game, there's so much stuff in here, so many fabulous things, so many different ways to appreciate this game. And then we thought, you know, we want to bring this to as many people as possible. So we kept thinking, okay, well, why not PlayStation? Sure, let's try that. And then how hard could it be? And then we okay, PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4, and then just more and more stuff. And we're like, yeah, let's launch it at the same time too. Like, how hard could that be? Like, consecutively launching on multiple platforms with a two-person company. But here we are. We've almost made it. I'll knock on wood because we're not there yet, but we're pretty close.
But now you can answer, how hard was it?
It was pretty hard.
It turns out
it was hard, but it's okay because it's been a great learning experience. And we've had so many great people we've been working with. It's really cool working with Sony. This is the first time I've worked with Sony directly. I've done games for them in the past, long ago, but to work with Sony's third-party developer support now and their marketing guys, and it's been really, really cool. They've made us feel really much at home. And it's a completely different way of doing things in a lot of aspects. And it's been a great learning experience. And it's cool to see how it works somewhere else and to add that out and to add that to our resume and to have so many different kinds of experiences for this game. Now we're going to be launching on Steam and on Switch and on PS4 and PS5 all on the same day. And it's going to be a blast.
That is ambitious as hell, by the way.
Do you feel like that relationship that you established and built up during the process of preparing it for that console with that support team will lead you to want to do more, say, for example, your next game to launch on such a console as well because of that support?
I think so. I mean, if it's possible, I totally want to have this kind of impact every time we do games. And, you know, like one thing that we really like launching Backbeat, or excuse me, well, Hexagroove on Xbox as well and on Steam. But those things came quite some time after the Switch release. I think it was like 8 months or 10 months later or something like that. And we really appreciated working with Microsoft there and then with getting the game on PC. But I think that especially for indies, you really got to have, you got like one shot at it. You know, when you're going to be in that coming soon, you're going to be at the top of the store list for, you know, a couple of days or a week or depending on which platform it is, maybe even just a couple hours before that blows right by you and there's something else. So I think it's really about maximizing that impact and then trying to get as much buzz as possible, both in with the press and with gamers and have people playing demos, going to shows and everything. And we're throwing everything we got at it. And that's what we're trying to do, our big punch right now.
Yeah, you definitely nailed it with that statement, because I was chatting with somebody about that just the other day, how we've reached this weird saturation point where game releases just flow. Like, there's another channel called I Dream of Indie, and every week they do a sort of like, here are the indie games we look forward to this week, not month, this week. And yeah. I can't fathom the amount of mental capacity you have to be able to be excited about like 15 new games every single week. Like, it's just... it's too much. It's too much. So I think you nailed it with the, you got to hit it while the iron is hot and just burn it as hard as you can while it's coming out.
Yep. Yeah.
Definitely. I know those guys, by the way.
Oh, really? Well, we'll have to chat about that later because I want to hear more about that, too.
Yeah. Joe had a band. I was in it. Anyway.
And eat your heart out, Mountain Dew Cinematic Universe.
Yay, but jokes that no one else gets.
No, I really like that. That was damn good and right off the top of your head, too.
I wonder if I should just keep all that in the show for now.
Couldn't hurt. I thought it was funny. It's honestly relatable content, so yes.
Livewire and Fulton, but anyway, you'll hear it. Backbeat.
You bring up the Mountain Dew Cinematic Universe, and this makes me think of Sneak King. Do you guys remember that game?
Oh god,
absolutely,
yes.
Absolutely. Didn't it actually win awards in some weird way? Like, people were all about Sneak King.
That was a Burger King game, right? Yeah. On the 360.
Yeah, Burger King had a weird promo where they released three different Xbox games.
Sneak King, Pocket Bike Racer, and. Oh, what was the third one?
The sad part is you couldn't remember the same one I can't remember. I was like, I knew it was a racing game and there was Sneaking, but the third one is
Big
eluding
Bumpin'.
Me. Sneaking was the most popular one, though, by far.
Big Bumpin' was the third one. It was like a bumper car style game.
That's right.
Honestly, I liked that era of gaming, too. It was very brief. But that window where, like, companies were like, we could produce video games that people will like. Well, Doritos had, like, Doritos Crash Course or some mess.
Doritos Crash Course was legitimately entertaining.
That's my point, though. It's like, I like the idea of these companies being like, we want to tap into this market, but knowing how the market works, you really can't put out a bad game. Because you'll look like crap if you do. So even like if they didn't Yaris. Have any, like, a major team behind it, the Yaris racing game. Like, it's just, they still had to put some level of effort in to make it work. It wasn't just, here's this thing, and our name is on it. Get us on a website.
Although, it's kind of how it went. I actually also appreciate the previous effort to, you know, make the already saturated side-scrolling platformer genre even more so with like Cool Spot and Chester Cheetah
The cool stuff.
There was Yo-Noid on the Nintendo too, right? There was Domino's Pizza one. Yeah.
Although that was slightly cheating because it was already a successful game in Japan about a ninja, and they just replaced the ninja with.
Wait, Yo-Noid was a reskin?
Oh, what? Wow. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Let me pull up the actual title. Ninja Hanamaru.
They got us. They got us, David. We didn't even know.
the pizza eating contest at the end of the stage, what used to be like kind of a, you'd choose a weapon to duel with somebody else with.
And you choose a weapon to eat.
Yeah, so they replaced all the ninja weapons with pizzas, which is, you know, that's the path to world peace, to be honest.
It is.
Oh, yeah. Pizza consumption, but you got to get the toppings right.
Yeah, yeah,
that's the
exactly.
most important part. I actually just had a Caribbean jerk pizza yesterday.
Oh my god, that sounds great.
Oh, it's fantastic. And
nice.
It got me on my tirade about pizza companies need to freaking get innovative again because it's getting sad out there. But it made me feel better to know that somebody was like, you know, we're going to make a pizza that most people won't buy, but the people that do, they're in for a damn treat. God damn.
You want to know the innovation that we didn't need in the pizza world?
What's that?
Fully stuffed pizza. Not stuffed crust. Stuffed pizza. Pizza.
At that point, isn't it just a freaking like deep dish?
It's just an extra layer of cheese, basically, in between the crust.
Sounds like a stromboli or something like that.
Yeah! There you go. It's like, that's not innovation. That's just them taking an existing product.
My use of innovation was sarcastic.
No, I know I'm pretty sure the pizza company. I know you were being sarcastic, but I'm sure the company that released it wasn't. They were like,
somebody just saw a stromboli one day, and they were like, "Oh, this is sad. Why don't we put a pizza on top of this?"
And magic happened, and by that we mean calorie loose. Because, yeah, like, it's like there's always, like, these weird things that people like to do. Like, I know Philadelphia, there was a thing that people used to do where you would go to Jim Steaks and order a large cheesesteak. And then you would go across the street to, like, one of the major pizza joints there and get their, like, mega-sized pizza and just wrap the cheesesteak with the pizza slice. And people were, like, toting it. Like, it was, like, this amazing discovery. I'm like, you know they make pizza steaks, right? You just put the stuff in the steak already. And eat it. You don't need to wrap a slice of pizza around a cheesesteak. That just seems ridiculous. I'd eat it. Don't get me wrong, but nah.
That's you're gonna
like people get crazy out there with this stuff. Like, hey, how do we make food feel new again? Let's just take two things and stomp them on top of each other and
or
eat
put
it.
Them in video games. Why not?
Or put them in video games.
Bringing the conversation full circle.
There you go.
I was going to say, here's a trivia question for our listeners. How did we get here from Backbeat?
By being good friends. That's how we got here.
If you can recreate how we got step by step from Backbeat to pizza innovations.
But that's why I like when David comes on here, though. Like, he doesn't feel like the typical guest. Like, he is a friend that comes on the show. And we just bullshit. And then it's also like, and by the way, he made a really cool game. Let's talk about that.
Here's my challenge to the audience. Try and find the last interview we did that wasn't entirely bullshit.
But these are good bullshits. We're great friends.
That is a fair point. All of our interviews are fairly bullshit, but you know, it's the good bullshit.
Yeah,
but now to do the thing that I usually don't do, I'm going to be the guy that finally does this. So, given the nature that we did come full circle to video games and Backbeat, the last time I played Backbeat was like a year ago when it was very, very new. Like, you were like, here's a build. You can try it. What are some singing points that you can say, hey, Pernell, you got to look forward to this when it comes out now, because this is what we've done since then. Expand on the game.
That's a great question. So, Pernell, did you try the demo, or did I give you a build that had more levels than was in the demo? Do you remember?
It was basically the very beginning of the game where it was like three or four levels I could do total. It wasn't a lot that I could do.
Right. So you did a couple levels in the demo. And then I think since that, we added one or two levels to the demo to make the demo even longer and kind of show off more of the mechanics. Because there's so many different facets of the way the Backbeat is put together. You know, we got the Sokoban style environment puzzles on its spatial foundation, but it's also a turn-based strategy game because you have a limited number of turns to get the characters to the goal, and they all move in different ways, and you have squad resources that are shared between all the characters in like an XCOM type style.
Okay.
And what we've done since you played it the last time is we fleshed this thing out, and we have finished all of the content now. So now we have 40 levels in the game. Ooh. There are 20 or so roughly main story levels and 20, I believe, remix levels that are like side missions that you can do to polish and pad your in-game points and your titles and unlock more vanity items and sound effects. We have, I believe it's 4 different guitar pedals or like you can effect pedals you can put on your instruments like distortion and chorus and an octaver and things like that that you can modify all your music with. There's like organs and saxophones and UEs and all these different kinds of instruments that you can swap out. And we have finished this story that just compromises like our ode to those 1990s ensemble dramedy films. You know, you think about like With Honors or with School of Rock or Wayne's World, Bill and Ted, things like that, where you have a cast of colorful characters that are coming together and trying to overcome adversity somehow. And you've got hopefully something everyone can relate to. And we have fleshed out this world. We've got amazing amounts of content. There's so much more to this world, to the world of Hornsburg in Backbeat than there is in Hexroof. It's just boggling to my mind how much we have packed into this title.
I gotta say, like I did when like Joe mentioned this and I went to the Switch page and saw that it was up there for pre-order. I did read the description and related it back to my experience, and my first thought was like, you made it so you can destroy walls? Keeping in mind, like the last time I played was like we're walking through the house to set up for band practice and go out of the arcade. And right. So I'm like, wow, this story must go somewhere. You're like, destroy the with your drummer. So give me some details on like some of the powers that you have, like the special one-off abilities that the characters get now and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So each of the characters, they move in different ways. And you learn that earlier in the game. You know, Watts and Toshi are kind of like bishops where they usually consume the same number of tiles in each turn, but they're staggered, they're offset. They can reach different places. Josh, remember, he moves a long distance. He moves 6 tiles at a time unless there's a wall or an inanimate object in his way. Then he'll pull up short there. And Chaz moves 1 tile at a time, the saxophonist. Now later, what happens is they learn that there is like these like mystical powers that they have inside of their psyche, which up to this point had been locked and like pent up inside. And then it's like this moment of clarity comes to all of them, and they have these ways that they can execute a super move at certain points in the game, and they all have cooldowns, so you can't use them all the time. They're not the buffs where you can just go bananas and things like that, but your bassist has this walking bass, and they all of these have like musical analogs because they do affect the music. Every super move and every move you make in the game changes the music that you hear, so your solution to the puzzle produces an original song. The bassist has a walking bass, and she can tiptoe through very tight spots. So she can get... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was interrupting rudely to say that I love the idea of the walking bass because they're walking bass lines.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So actually,
the bassist got the joke.
Yes.
I was about to say, actually, Chris, you being on this interview was actually really good because I think you'd appreciate this game based on how he designed it.
I also played this one when you did. I just didn't play all of the demo. I played like the first couple levels.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally know this game. It's great.
Yeah.
So the walking bass allows you to cover more distance and less clock time. So she becomes like a vanguard where you want to send her in behind enemy lines early on and open the doors through the switches or like distract someone else out of the way so that the other characters can follow up and spread out and move through the level. Like you said, the drummer, Josh, yes. Mm-hmm. To give a little bit of backstory about it, you know, he was a football player in high school, and he has a bit of a anger management problem, so as we say. And it just turns out that he is incredibly adept at breaking holes through walls. So what he can do is he does a drum break, and he just like literally busts through a wall when he does this. And that opens a new path, both he and other band members can follow through. With Toshi, he can do like a Pete Townsend type thing where he slides on his knees while he's like wailing on his guitar, and he uses to warp through enemies. So he has like a Nightcrawler type ability there where if he's about to be hit by an enemy, he can warp through that enemy if they're coming at him head on.
That's really cool.
And then finally, Chaz has the super sax. And what he does is he just like gets on his thing and he toots so hard that it drives any kind of guards that are coming towards him like insane temporarily. And they run away holding their ears, and you can push them off of their patrol paths from one bar and use that time to like hold them back while someone behind him was doing a time sensitive operation or trying to sneak by or something like that.
Fools, Chaz toots as he pleases.
I'm just writing down a timestamp of where you said he toots so hard, because I want to have a sound clip of that.
You gotta put it on your board. You gotta put it on the same soundboard as the Purnell thing, where yes. Purnell has his "oh yeah," "oh yeah," yeah.
Which we've amazingly had a bunch of subs dropped in between our last episode and this episode, thanks to the 10th anniversary contest that we're running. By the way, thanks again for donating the copy of Hexagroove. How's things going with that game?
Hexagroove is going great. It's not at the forefront of what we're doing right now, obviously, because we got our nose down and we're looking at Backbeat, but it makes me feel really, really cool because I still see people getting into it, new people getting into it all the time. And then sometimes people just like tweet into the ether like, "Does anybody know how to get past level 5 or do this trick or something like that?" And then, of course, because I have like Twitter filters and stuff, like I'm like, "Oh, someone's talking about Hexagroove." And then, like, I respond to them. They're like, "Yeah, you just got to do this thing." It's like, "Oh my God, thank you so much. It's amazing. This game rocks."
And for the record, I'm glad to hear that you do something like that. I only recently learned that Twitter filters to find content even exist. Like the most odd things you'll post, like a TV show that came out in the 90s. Someone will comment on it like, "Yeah, how did you know I talked about that?" Yeah. There it is. So, but yeah, I might have to keep that in mind if I have some trouble with some games too, because it's getting hard out here to find tips when everybody's playing every damn thing. So
yeah, the Nintendo Hotline isn't around anymore, so you got to go someplace else.
Right. That thing was a staple, a necessary staple. So
I never used it. I mean, never? That's not a brag.
La-di-da, Mr. Game Pro.
No, that wasn't a brag. I was very poor. There's no way I could get.
Too. Trust me, my parents. Like I got in trouble. $3.95
a minute or something like that. There's no way
you can. And trust and believe, when I did use it, I got in big trouble when the phone bill came, but it was worth it. I wasn't supposed to call it.
Oh yeah, see, I was a good kid. I was very obedient. Rather, what my parents didn't have a credit card.
You got Mr. Goodchild over here.
That was a pretty good kid.
Almost like a good pastor.
Oh, no, I guess. Oh.
Christ. I was a pretty good kid.
You were the one that was like, "Oh, let's not invoke his name last time."
Right, not enough.
Episode on a different day.
Joe's like, "I can break all the rules."
I know. Joe is terrible. Lifting that curtain.
Anyway. I had to go for a second because I just got my my very first physical PS5 game in the mail.
Ooh, do tell.
It's a Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion.
Ooh. All right, wow.
I was literally just talking about that game. Well, no, sorry, I was talking about, sorry, 7 Remake, but close enough. Hopefully the game is good, because I've never played Crisis Core myself, though, despite already owning it.
It's good. It's like, it's weird because it's like, it was... You know, the prequel to Final Fantasy VII, of course, we don't need to talk about that. But, like, the action of it on the PSP was, like, kind of more, a little bit more action-oriented than, like, the turn-based FF7 style, which some people were into, some people were not. But then 7 Remake came out, and it's also more action-oriented, unless you turn that off. And then, like, when they remade Crisis Core, they just had to, like, tweak a couple of things to basically make it like Final Fantasy VII Remake, so... They're kind of hopscotching the gameplay as far as that goes.
Well, I got one quick statement to make about that. Then I got a genuine question related to this to you. So it'll be interesting. But the first thing I wanted to mention, this goes for literally anybody in the chat if they're interested, is so someone today actually brought up Final Fantasy VII Remake to me because they were watching a video about Final Fantasy XIII and how much everybody hated it. I did not hate it, by the way, but a lot of people hated it. And they
Which team?
Like, there's a company, like a Digital Foundry it was called, I think, did it. And I can give you a link later. But they did a video on like a retrospective of Final Fantasy 13. And apparently what I didn't know is that for everything they hated about 13 back in the day, they took a lot of what was brought up in that game and used it in Final Fantasy 7 Remake, which people like now. So it has me thinking, oh, man, I got to dig more into this and see what else has happened where people didn't like it at first, but under a new coat of paint, they thought it was great. But now, the question related to the game, but also because we're bullshitting. So you just heard David mention how the different band members have unique powers embedded within their psyches that they can use if in the game to make progress. You being the only person on our show that is in a band. What would you say your power would be if you could unlock some sort of physical power manifestation through your own actions or whatever?
Okay. Well, I'm always like, it's so is this going to be like a like an actual physical move I can do, or is it just like kind of a like the role that I play in the story or something like that? Like, are we talking, I guess we're talking like special moves since it's in this context.
Yeah, like you just said, like the drummer smashing walls and Nightcrawler and slides.
I could maybe enact some sort of like, you know, I think that I'm like a good support. I think I can buff the rest of the band for like three moves or something like that.
And you regenerate the health gauges for the encore performance.
Yeah. I definitely like in bands, I tend to be like that kind of person that, because I'm not like, you know, obviously an egotistical person would say I'm the one that doesn't have an ego, but I will say, so I'm not going to say I don't have one. I'm just going to say that I like to expend a lot of my ego energy pumping other people up about their stuff, you know? So like,
it's a good way to be.
Yeah.
So that has me thinking too, then, like, based on what you just described, like, would you say that in the universe of your game, David, that Chris would be the character that could potentially bring someone's cooldown back to snuff sooner than usual?
Yeah, I think that definitely. I think that Chris sounds very similar to Watts, who is the lead character in our game, because what she does is she spends the entire game trying to like rein in all these wacky personalities of people that are in her band and stop fights from breaking out, or like, you know, prima donnas from like trying to steal the show, and making sure everyone gets along and gets the job done.
The other thing is, if you know, hearkening back like physical like things, like hearkening back to my old days with DAV, I was known for doing a lot of jumps. I would vault off my amp and stuff, and I would just like, you know, I got a lot of air time as a bassist. So that would be there. My thing. I wouldn't be able to move very far, but I could like clear like crates or something.
Hey, from what I've learned over the last few years of trying to get into fitness, a lot of people have trouble clearing crates. So you're doing a lot there too. So don't fool yourself. You're kicking it out. See, there it is. Like, now I feel like I'm not a musician in any way, but I am a loud person. So maybe my power would be more something akin to Chaz's making people like run off and by making like very loud, like vocal tones, like something like a metal scream or something like that. Yeah, that could be fun.
Maybe we could send you in and like make sure we actually get paid for the gigs if the club owner tries to stiff us.
Hey, that's the
I feel
best.
Like that would
power.
Be my job.
you and Brooke could like team up as hype men.
Hey, I'm down for that. Like, get them in there. Get them in there. Give them some more money. They deserve it. Encores, bitches.
I feel like I'd be muscle. I could beating people up for money in the back alley.
The River City Ransom minigame.
Yeah.
if you didn't know, our other person who's not here today, Brooke, one of her nicknames is the hype man who cries a lot. just to let you in on the joke.
Oh, beautiful.
But I am looking forward to this game. Like, I do want to play more of it. I liked what it was before you added all the other cool stuff. So now I have an even more expansive game to look forward to when it's released.
Speaking of cool stuff, you got a blog on or a post on the PlayStation blog. What kind of fun features are in the PlayStation version of the game?
Yes. So in the PlayStation version of the game, we have made some adjustments for the DualSense controller in particular, because the way that you can control vibrations in PlayStation 5 is really, really intricate, and it's very nice. So with a game that is about, you know, breaking through walls and rewinding analog tape, you know, there's a lot of aesthetic that we have about VHS cassettes. When you're going backwards and forwards through time, you're rewinding and fast forwarding. We have that going on in the UI with like video distortion and that kind of jazz. And we worked all that into the DualSense so that when you're doing these operations, the DualSense is making sound and also vibrating to create the feeling of like, oh, this is like what a VHS player was like when it was rewinding or fast forwarding, or here's a big crack when Josh breaks through a wall and things like that. So we started working with a lot of musical audio files and converted those into special vibrations just for the DualSense controller to bring out special stuff there. And of course the game looks really, really crisp, even though it's retro inspired. It's all 4K and runs like a gem on a PS5. So that's really, really cool.
Well, what you're telling me is that I shouldn't get it on Switch now if I have the option, because it sounds like I want to experience that.
Well, why not both, as the girl says?
Yeah. I was going to say, does the Switch have 3D rumble?
Yes, the Switch does have the HD rumble feature. Yes. So and they feel a little bit different. So if you want to get your vibe on in two different ways, you can compare and contrast and see which one's more your style.
Hold one controller in one hand, the other in the other, and
now compare vibrations. Right there is marketing. That's good marketing. Like, why buy one? You can buy both of them and experience it in different ways.
That's right. You can play on the bus with your Switch and then play on your giant 4K screen at home on your PS5.
Oh yeah.
Are there any plans at all for an Xbox version?
Xbox, yeah, that would be really cool. I would like to do an Xbox version, but we don't have anything for that just yet. But I hope to, because we were talking about that Impact thing. That would be cool to do sometime.
Well, it would be a good way to get on the radar too, as we talked earlier about the whole, you know, you got the window and then everything gets flooded out. Well, yeah. Well, another release coming out. Talk about it again. So, but that would be awesome. But now I'm thinking too, like, so the game's coming out. It's pretty much done. It's just waiting for the release now. In retrospect, though, it still kind of feels like you're in the middle of it. Can you think of anything that you wish you had more time to have implemented that you couldn't in this game?
Yeah, I mean, I got a Trello backlog a mile long. I think what I've done probably is I've like tried to blank it out of my mind, because I didn't want to, otherwise I'll start talking to my lead program and be like, hey, don't we have time for kind of thing like that? He'll go, no more features, stop it.
So that's like, what new releases are for, so you're covered.
Yeah, exactly. So we got these lists in Trello. We got like nice to have 1.0, maybe not, and 1.1 in the future and things like that. And it's just like chock full of stuff in here. Oh, what can I say? Man, there's so many things I want to do. I guess maybe it's not that we didn't have time for it, but maybe something that I would like to kind of do in the future is that this world that we're building, this world that takes place in 1995 suburban Washington, D.C., like, I've grown so attached to these characters. You know, and they have the two big bands. You have Power Slide, which is the funk band led by Watts, the Heroes. And then you have their nemesis, La Tormenta, the Latin jazz exotic band of these flamboyant art school impresarios that just have this huge following already when the game is starting up. I would love to like look more into like their life and where they're coming from, and then see, you know, what is it that made these people who they are, like that made the adversaries of Power Slide become who they are, and like
get an alternate story mode that takes place in 1990.
Yeah, man, that's not a bad idea.
Could that be the first DLC expansion, maybe?
Yeah, maybe, like, how did these people get here? Like, what happened before? Like, yeah, exactly. Backstory, lots of things like that. Because to me, it's like it's this world that I want to grow. I love telling stories, and that's why I got into games in the first place. Is that, you know, when I was a kid and I was playing on the PC with my brother and my dad, and we were doing Quest for Glory and King's Quest and things like that, and just, you know, like, I thought that was the coolest thing, and I was like, I want to tell a story where we have comedy and drama and people that you care about and saving the day and working together and finally with Backbeat, I can tell a story. And it's just, it's fantastic. That's been probably one of my favorite things in making this game. And I want to keep doing that. And I want to grow it. And I want to share. So I want everyone to be able to feel, you know, motivated by this.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this is going to be officially when Ichigo Ichie hits like year 20 or something, we go back to the retrospective of your company. This game is going to have like a nice bullet point. Like, this was when I was able to tell my first in-game story.
Yeah.
And it just took off from there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the bar is especially high now because there are so many games with like great stories. And, you know, and I'm not trying, you know, the Backbeat is what it is. I'm not trying to tell like a story about, you know, the horrors of war or what it's like to be an oppressed person. I couldn't even begin to talk to those things. That's not where I'm from, not my background. But definitely the bar now for indie game stories is so much higher, even for comedy and things like that. And I think you see that. Yeah,
you can tell a completely good story with like an absurd or surreal premise. Like, I mean, look at Earthbound.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's my point, is there's a lot of great games out there. So I think it's really hard to impress people with good story. And especially now with like prestige television and things like that, like people just expect so much more. So it's a tough place to cut the niche, I think.
How do you stand out in the flood of all the releases? Like, how do you find a way to make yourself stand out from the rest of the crowd?
Yeah, I don't have a formula. I mean, I've been trying so many different things, and I've adjusted, I guess, the marketing spiel for this game constantly over the past 3 years since I've been pitching it, you know, from to people internally to other studios and things like that, up to the press. And I've like updated the Steam page so many times, like changing the language to try to find something that's going to click with people so they can understand how unique it is, but unique in a good way. Like, you're really, there's something here for everyone. I think it's like the Swedish smorgasbord. You come to the table and there are so many different delicious things that you can enjoy. And then maybe you find some new taste that you never knew, and it becomes your new favorite thing to eat. And you find that inside of this game. But
keep in mind also that sometimes it's not, I mean, like you said, there's so much out there, but due to the fact that there's so much out there that hits these certain highs, sometimes people are looking for the thing that feels more like home, I guess I'll call it. Where it's like, you know, this isn't big budget. This isn't like 20 writers around a table coming up with the story. This is a guy being like, I want to tell a story about a band. A band that wants to become big. And that's your story. And it's good, you know?
Yeah. It feels real. It doesn't feel manufactured and scripted.
Yeah.
By the way, I was, so like this whole interview and my sleepy brain, like, was totally, I was putting all this together and I was thinking, man, I want to play like a dark, gritty reboot of Yo-Noid.
Noid doesn't just eat pizzas. He destroys pieces.
He found out that he has like an illegitimate child or something like that. Subway and it's Jared. And yeah, I don't know.
No, there's a real dark other side to the Noid. If you didn't know.
Yeah,
the black one. Do tell.
You don't know about Kenneth Noid?
No.
No.
Oh, no, but
there's two of them, right? There's like the red costume one and the like the black costume one. That's what you mean, right?
No. Yeah, that's the fiction. No. There was a real man called Kenneth Noid who thought he had some problems, right? And he thought that the Avoid the Noid campaign was directed at him, and he went nuts and like held up a Domino's restaurant. And got arrested and stuff, and yeah, he just caused all kinds of trouble. And
would this Dark Noid's narrative be like a game that takes place from two perspectives, being the person who believes he's the Noid terrorizing Domino's restaurants, and then the psychiatrist just trying to help him?
Nobody did end up helping this guy. I mean, you know, he ended up killing himself. And
well, remember, we're writing a story with a hopefully better ending.
It would have to be like one of those things, like you're playing as the Noid, but then you find out there's like a meta that you're playing as like the disturbed person. Like I could see it. It would be very dark, very gritty, and you know, of course, it would mess with the players' minds. Spaceballs
crossover where you meet up with Pizza the Hut.
Hey, there you go.
Which then that actually leads me to a actually good question here too, because we were talking about, you know, making a story that stands out. And then we were kind of talking about, like, you know, maybe it just needs to be your story that just works for you and other people will adapt to it and like it. But that makes me wonder, even though obviously this is early on, we're just bullshitting here. Do you, what would be an idea for you for maybe a narrative for your next game, like a general broad plot?
Are you talking to, who are you talking to?
To David. Okay. David's gotcha. Like, we didn't make any games. I wish I did.
I was going to say, I couldn't tell.
So the question. Yeah, I don't know. I think that you want to tell something that feels familiar, but you also want to tell something that leverages the fact that we have this platform, we have this medium, and you want to tell something that can help some people in some way, or it can mean something to someone who maybe has felt kind of marginalized, or someone who is kind of overwhelmed or snowed under like a deluge of, you know, the information overload, saturation, things like that. I don't know. I think, like they say, like, you got to write what you know, and I don't have a lot of dark background, fortunately. Oh, I guess. Yeah. So but I mean, I have my struggles, and I've been in places, and I have the perspective of you know, I grew up in America, but then I moved to Japan when I was 20. Mm-hmm. and I lived there for 10 years, and then coming and discovering myself as an adult, but at the same time also being, you know, marginalized and viewed as kind of like a token stereotype as, oh, it's the crazy white guy that doesn't know how to follow the customs and rules and things like that. Exactly. And that's been looked at in lots of different ways, but I think you could find some way maybe to do that with nuance and do it in a way that's general enough that other people, it's not exclusive just to people moving to Japan that feel that way. I think lots of people, they find themselves at the same time, they move into some place where they feel as they're an outsider, and they love the fact that, you know, everything is so magical anyway. That kind of juxtaposition sounds interesting to me. Maybe we can
also keep in mind, you don't even have to, I mean, dark seems to be like the go-to for a lot of companies and stuff, but you could honestly even just write something that makes you happy, that in turn would make other people happy, or just something that's off the wall that no one in their right mind would think is good until they see it on paper. Like, I got to see what the fuck this is. Like,
yeah.
For some reason, I had an idea, like, what if a chef who was down on his luck realized he had the ability to go to another universe, and in that universe, he learned how to cook using stuff that existed only there. So he would make food there using their ingredients, bring it back here, and sell it as exotic cuisine. Like, just weird junk that no one else would buy. That was me thinking of an idea, like, while asking that question. Like, that would be bizarre. And I don't even know why I came up with it. Now, it would be like Forspoken, except I think she's stuck where she's at, and she's saving their world.
Well, that's the twist. That's the twist. That's the Pernell twist.
Yes, there we go. Like, she's leaving New York City to go to, like, I don't know, wherever world, and just making food there and then bringing it back to New York. Is like, who, this freaking crazy restaurant in the Bronx, they make this stuff I can't put my finger on it. What are they using? This flavor, this taste sensation. And then people are trying to, like, crack the secret. She's got, like, freaking, like, espionage agents kind of sneaking into a restaurant at night, and they see weird gates opening up. Just, God, that would be a weird thing to write. But
what if she's stuck in the world, but then she opens a conduit, and all these guys that were, like, laid off by Uber Eats or something are the ones that start carrying the food for her. And then, like,
well, that would be cool.
All these laid off, like, food delivery workers, like, find, like, oh, they get, like, decent workers' comp and, like, health insurance and things like that because they deliver this product that makes the world better while she's stuck cooking in the other dimension.
That is see? And we just came up with it. You could write that shit, and no one would think it's good until it comes, like, this is something I never expected to like, and this is really fucking good. Like, that to me is better than another society is on the rocks and only one hero and his ragtag band of friends can save it from the corporate conglomerate known as Shinra. I don't know.
That's taken. Yeah, that's already.
It can be done. It can be done. Well, it's been taken many times. That's the point. That's been a story that's been done. But, like, I would love to see something crazy like that happen. But I don't have a team in cool programmer expertise. But, like, it doesn't have to be dark. It can just be ridiculous, fun, silly, whatever works. And it just, that's the concept I think would capture people more nowadays. It just has to be done well. And from what I've seen from this game and hoping to see more in the final product, you already know how to do things well. So just got to tweak it a little bit for the crazier stuff. But yeah. I digress.
Thank you.
So when is the game launching? Give us all the details on it.
So the game does come out on Switch on March 16th. We don't have a date for anything else nailed down just yet, but like you mentioned before, Switch is available for pre-order right now, and that is running with a discount. And once to do a pre-order, you have to lock in the date and the price and all that jazz, and that's what we've done. So the Switch is a done deal, and the others, we're going to try to get it as close to that as possible, but we'll see how it ends up.
Okay.
Nice. I know we've been chatting for a while. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. I mean, we've covered a lot of the stuff today, and it was really cool talking with you guys. I just like hanging out. I'm just happy to talk with you guys about anything, to be honest. I love talking about looking at the industry and ideas and how games are made and what's challenging and that kind of stuff. It's really cool to hear your guys' perspective on things.
Well, we love having you on the show. It's a thrill to have you back on as I guess part of our anniversary spectacular festivities. The timing worked out perfectly, so I'm thrilled that you're a part of everything going on. Yeah, we love having you on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We'll have to get you back on again maybe next month when it hits the Switch.
That would be cool. Yeah. And like there is a demo now on PlayStation as well, so you can try the demo on PS4, PS5, Steam, or Switch. The demo is out everywhere, so give that a spin if you want, and check out the 4K, the shiny version,
and the rumbly version.
That's right, the shiny rumbly version of the PlayStation blog.
Where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
They can follow us on Twitter. We're still there. We still believe in Twitter, and that's our prime place. Ichigo, Ichie, _INC is our account. You can also find me personally at Game Deventura, the portmanteau of what I do and my last name. And we also have Instagram and YouTube, Ichigo, Ichie Games. And you can find us on there with more videos and things like that. But the great place to start with is backbeatgame.com, which is our 1995 website. If you guys...
I love it.
Remember
so
GeoCities,
much.
If you remember what Internet Explorer 3.0, that's right. Go to backbeatgame.com and see what the internet looked like.
It is such a beautiful website. It makes me so happy to browse on that thing.
We had to boot up a virtual machine of Windows 95 to run this program, ULEED Cool 3D, which was like a trendy 3D modeling program in 1995, where you could like give it like an icon or an outline, and it would like... lathe it out for you. So we have like a rotating Twitter bird there and things like that that we built running 1995 Windows technology with.
Oh, that is beautiful.
That sounds awesome. I am a sucker for that level of nostalgia.
Oh, man. All right. Well, David, thank you so much for joining us. We are going to take a quick break with the show. We will be back with more party cast and reviews. Chris and Purnell, don't go anywhere. You're gonna have to stick around and do more talking.
For how long?
You just shut the hell up and you'll find out.
You had that sandwich, Purnell.
Yeah.
Fine.
You should have all the energy you need for a full night of this shit. David, do you have any final words to end this?
Just want to say peace, guys. Take it easy. Everyone, be safe out there.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to David Ventura for coming on and chatting with us. Chris and Purnell are still here, and Tim's joining us. How is everyone doing?
I didn't even know what happened.
Yeah, there was a chat.
Oh, my God.
It's only been like 5 minutes, so I haven't changed.
Yeah. It literally just happened. It like just ended. Should have been when it was fun. It didn't happen 3 days ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I'll believe
somehow
you.
I feel more awake now.
Do people even know when this is happening?
I don't know. Do we know when this is happening?
In the present, but also the future. That's how episode releases work.
It can't happen in the past.
Unless.
It already would have.
Modern mushroom.
So how's everyone doing? How's things going? How was everybody's weekend?
I was sick, so it was there.
How you feeling now?
I you could probably sense I'm still like a little scratchy, and I'm definitely still worn out. My child was sick like last week, and then I got it, and now my wife has it. But fortunately, I missed when they had the stomach flu like 2 weeks ago, and they were throwing up. I didn't get that one, so
nice.
It's when your kid gets sick, is there like a thing people can do to like prep? Because usually people tell me when their kid's sick, they're going to get sick within a week or two.
Yeah, it's just too late. Well, you know, he's been sick 5 times since the beginning of the school year because there's no masking, obviously, anymore. So illness is now running rampant again. And I haven't, this is the first one that I've caught off of him. I don't know. I've just been ducking it, but
that was a good run
somehow. It was a good run. Yeah.
Well, I still wear them at work, even though people look at me like I'm crazy or something. Because at the end of the day,
I mean, when you're feeling ill, is when you should wear one.
A condom?
No, a mask. You idiot! You would have known that if you were here on time.
I usually do that. Like more definitely wear a condom when
you're feeling ill. You should wear a condom.
All the time during all that action I'm getting.
I just figured it was because you didn't want to spray your man yogurt everywhere.
Oh my God.
Price this crap. This is why we don't let Jacob off Tuesdays that often.
Yeah, Thursdays.
Go back to being late, Jacob.
That too.
I was 3 minutes.
Yeah. The show went straight to the gutter.
Hey, question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is the Xbox 360 region free?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Well, we're trying to go. Wait, I think it depends because there were.
Well, wait, yeah, because I definitely
some games are region free.
Oh, some
the
games
system
are, okay.
itself is region locked.
There we go. That's why I was trying. Cause I knew like people were like buying like Dota and Pachi and stuff like that. That was a big one people were importing.
Yeah, I got a game, and of course I bought it from Amazon, so naturally it was not stated on there that it's from England.
What game?
What game is it?
Star Ocean, The Last Hope.
Huh. You got it. Was it just accidental that you got a European version of it?
Yes, of course. I wouldn't have chosen that. But Amazon does not, Amazon does apparently not ask for that sort of information when it comes to listing games. And the game listings are completely, like, lawless. Like, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, I guess you just have to roll the dice and see what happens, Kay. You don't get that reference yet, but you're gonna.
I mean, it'll work if you pick up an Xbox One or a Series X. It'll work in there, no problem, because the Series and the Xbox One is not region locked. But I do not know if that disc is region locked for 360.
I am curious, though. What got you? What got you interested in The Last Hope at this phase?
Well, was it just I own all of the other Star Oceans except for The Last Hope and Integrity and Faithlessness. So I was just like, well, I might as well pick them up. And
well, for one, I was going to say one. It's funny because I feel like you almost said Star Fox.
Might have.
Also, it feels weird to say this as a person who does own it, but if you get Integrity and Faithlessness, like I feel like The Last Hope had a bit of a split. And is whether people liked it or disliked it. I was in the like it train, despite the run mechanic being terrible. But Integrity and Faithlessness is... Whoa.
Oh, everybody hates that one, I know.
It had some moments.
I would honestly recommend returning the 360 one that you got and just grab it on PS4.
I think that Last Hope was 360 and PS3.
It was PS3.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it got a remake, though.
Did it? Okay.
I think so.
I'll have to double-check, but I thought it was the Xbox 360 was the original exclusive version, and then eventually it came out to PS3 as
Star Hope, The Last Hope, like International or something weird like that. Or like some kind of like good edition where they changed the art to be more like anime style and whatnot.
Star Ocean, The Last Hope, 4K and full HD remaster. Available on PS4. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. In that case, get that.
Is it like, is there a physical game?
No, digital.
So it was digital only?
Yeah.
That's probably why it didn't click for me. Because I only know about the physical box version of it. Because they were toting like, people missed the anime art. It was like, well, we put it back.
Hang on a second here. Orders. I'm going to see. Let's see here.
They have First Departure R, Till the End of Time, Last Hope, and Integrity and Faithlessness all on PS4.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I might have to get that digitally then. Well, can you... I don't know. I have a PS5 as well. Can I just buy it on the PS5?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, I might as well. Also,
it might not hurt to try contacting Amazon for a refund because you might luck out and they might just give you the money back.
Oh, Amazon's really customer... like, trust me, as somebody who works for a software company that, you know, assists these merchants, these unscrupulous bastards, Amazon definitely sides with the customer in cases like this, and the game hasn't been opened, so I can definitely return it. It's just like, ugh. Yeah.
They might just tell you to keep it.
I was about to say, they might just let you keep the damn thing. Because it's less skin off their back to just say, well, we didn't mean it, but it's more effort to make you send it back. Just keep it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
We had some hot cocoa that was recalled, and they were like, oh, just throw it away. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. We'll do that. We'll get right on that. We're totally going to throw it all away.
Wait, why is it recalled? Hot
cocoa? Because it may have peanut in it. Because of peanut butter ones.
Oh.
And it wasn't disclosed properly. So there's no actual, like, real problem. Unless you have a peanut allergy, but we don't, so we're good.
I'm going to say, what's the issue? Oh, botulism. You can just scrape that off.
Ebola.
Bits of razor blades found in the cocoa. Yes.
Found in your cocoa.
At least that wasn't my, that was my only loss, I suppose, this weekend for my very small amount of game shopping. I also got a sealed copy of Tales of Graces F on the PS3.
That's a good game.
Yeah, it was. They had it at Half Price Books, and it was sealed up, and it was like, you know, $10 less than what it's selling new or like used. So I was like, I'll get it. And then, go ahead.
No, I was going to just tell you. It also, if you're not aware of it, it also has like a really good epilogue, which is
nice.
It's fantastic. You'll like it.
Yeah, it's my first PS3 game to purchase, actually. The other thing is that I got a really minty copy of Golvellius Valley of Doom on the Master System.
I don't even know what that is.
early action RPG. It's one of the, like, if anybody has like a list of like, these are the good Master System games, then it's always on there, along with like Phantasy Star and, you know, The Ninja. I don't know if The Ninja's on there, but I love that title.
You know what title I like?
What's that?
There's a new game that just came out. Got a really cool title. A good segue into our reviews.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Hogwarts Legacy?
No. It's called Hi-Fi Rush.
Fuck you.
Should we get to reviews? Everyone ready for these?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Yeah.
All right.
Now I'm ready.
Wait. Okay.
Just one moment.
Okay.
And
you have to start on the beat.
Okay. Hi-Fi Rush, developed by Tango Gameworks, published by Bethesda Softworks, released January 26th on Xbox Series X and S, Windows 10, and PC for $29.99. Feel the Beat is wannabe Rockstar Chai and his ragtag team of allies rebel against an evil robotics enhancement megacore with raucous rhythm combat. From Tango Gameworks, the studio that brought you The Evil Within and Ghostwire Tokyo, no, really, comes Hi-Fi Rush, an all-new action game where the characters, world, and combat stylishly synced to the music. Tim, tell us about your time with Hi-Fi Rush.
It's funny. It's just like, this is going to be the game that like people think of when they think of that company now, because it's probably the best one they've made. I think the most universally loved it. Because, you know, at least with like I know there's some fans of The Evil Within's, and Ghostwire Tokyo seemed like it was like okay, but everybody seems to like this game, and it's such a departure. Yeah, so Hi-Fi Rush, which, you know, people may have heard of. This is a game that was shadow dropped out of nowhere during that Xbox thing like a week and a half ago. And
it's like kind of like taking the world by storm out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's shadow drop in the truest sense of like,
fucking,
you know,
yeah.
It's not like there was a trailer like last year and people knew that there was a game called Hi-Fi Rush on the way. It was just like, oh, here's this game. Oh, hey, it's out. Right. Meow.
Another okay is the Deja Vu just gifted a 1 month sub to Lady Magritte. So thank you so much for that gift sub. That puts us up to 44 out of 50. We are so close to getting a new emote.
Wow. Nice.
I know. I'm thrilled. Yeah,
it's so cool.
We'll never get this high again.
I'm so high right
now. We're going to get so high.
So Hi-Fi Rush is a character action rhythm game. it's Devil May Cry meets Gitaru Man, I guess, in a way. You're this dude who is lining up at this corporation where there's a bunch of other people, I think, all lining up to, because they're advertising, you know, cybernetic enhancements, and your boy has something wrong with his arm. They never really go into great detail as to what it is, but he manages to cut the line, get in there, get in the machine, and get himself a new arm, except wait, his, like, music player also fell into the machine that gives you cybernetic enhancements, and it, like, bolted the thing to his chest. So now, yeah, the world, it doesn't just affect him, it affects the entire world around him. And this game just has a just crazy visual style to it. I mean, since like cell shading became a thing, you know, over 20 years ago, it's like, you know, you do that style, it's like, oh, it looks like a cartoon. And this game has a cell shaded style, but it's like, holy crap, like, this looks like a cartoon, you know, in the cutscenes. Like, it made it there. You know, unmistakably a video game when you're actually doing video game things, but there's no doubt it just looks amazing. And beyond just that, like, when you're standing in a level, like, the whole level is grooving to the beat of the music that's playing in the background. And it really stands out in levels that are, you know, the entire game takes place at this company's like giant campus, but levels where you're like outside and you can look out over the horizon and see things just bobbing and moving and like the whole world like getting down to the beat of the music that's playing. It's just so freaking cool. It is just so freaking cool. But aside from the fact that the entire world is moving to the beat, the game, the combat, like I said, this is a character action game. So this is 3D, you know, arena action, beating the heck out of robots game. And all of your actions, like all of your combos, they don't, your button presses don't have to be directly to the beat. At least on like lower difficulty levels, but your combos are going to come out on the beat. So you end up being rewarded. Like if you are hitting those button presses, like on the beat, like your combos do more damage. But even if you're still kind of just like mashing it out, like the actions are still going to come out of the character. So it's not like it's not a thing where it's like, where if you're failing to keep on the beat, like, you're just failing hard at the combat. Like you can still kind of muddle through even if you're just like just way off of it. But you know, the game does so much visually to like keep you cued in and locked in on the beat. Like I said, like the whole world is, you know, bumping and grooving to the music. There's a little mechanical cat that follows you around and it turns into a little sphere that like floats near you and that thing like pulses. Your character snaps his fingers like when he's idle to the beat. And if you just want a thing on the screen that shows you where the beat is, you can just pull that up with a touch of a button. And it'll just have like a little timeline on the bottom that shows the beats coming in, so you can keep track of it that way too. But you know, in combat, you have your combos are a basic, you know, light heavy mix up, as they are wont to do in these games. You unlock, you know, you gain currency and there's a shop and you unlock more combos as you go. And you can knock enemies up into the air and there are air combos. You get buddy characters, who will assist you in traversal elements of the levels. But you can also call upon them in combat, which is necessary when you're dealing with enemies that have shields or, enemies that have energy shields and enemies that have physical shields and enemies that are on fire, or just to do more damage, or you can eventually unlock abilities to call them in at the end of combos for like a big, animated flourish that looks super cool. There's super moves. You're building up a meter throughout, combat that lets you pull off bigger, flashier moves. There's a whole parry system, which I kind of didn't think I was going to like and use, but you know, the enemies are telegraphing like when they're going to attack, and they have a pretty generous window to the parry, so that it's not like a super tight parry timing. Like most things with the game, it's like, yeah, if you hit it on the beat, you get more of a bonus off of it. But it's like it just flows really well when you're in combat and you're doing a combo. And like, you know, another enemy is winding up and you can just instantly, you know, two tap parry whatever sword swing is coming at you. There's a dash. You can do three dashes again on the beat, and attack at the end of them. All this stuff strings together really well. And the more stuff you unlock, just kind of the deeper and more, options you have in combat. There's a good variety of enemies. I mean, they're all freaking robots. They're all robots, but they all have, you know, different quirks and abilities that you need to keep track of, in battle. And they have a lot of personality besides that, which is a lot of fun. The game is, so this game is free, you know, it comes with Game Pass. Or it's like, what, $30, Joe?
$30, $29.99. They also have a deluxe edition upgrade pack for $10 if you want to do that.
What comes with that?
Let me pull it up quick. I know there's like in-game currency. It gives you 808 themed guitar skin, 808 alternate skin, 7 bonus t-shirts, 2 outfits, and 20,000 gears for
unlocking. Yeah, it doesn't seem like something you really need. Yeah, you don't really need to spend $10 on that. But the thing is, for a game that is, you know, competitively priced, let's say, like it is just as robust as what you would deem a full price $60 game in terms of, it's not like a short thing. It's not, there's no part of it that feels underbaked. I mean, like I cannot understate the look of this game and how great it looks. Like you're not playing this thing like, oh, I'm playing some, you know, cheap thing they just threw out on Game Pass. Like, you know, it is like going to take you 10 hours to get through the story. There is plenty of stuff to do afterwards. You get like a challenge tower unlocked. There is a reason to go back to the stages. There's more difficulties.
How's the soundtrack? Because that looks very unique.
Well, it's a lot. I mean, it's good. It's great. It has a handful of licensed songs that pop up here and there, mostly during boss battles. There is a entire level, pretty much the entire level is set to Prodigy's Invaders Must Die, and that level fucking rules. It is so goddamn good. The game, it starts off really strong. It's like you get into it and, you know, makes one hell of a first impression. There's like some of the levels kind of in the middle that I wasn't quite as enthralled with because you're like indoors and moving through ducts and I don't know, this just wasn't quite as interesting from a level design perspective. But, you know, it picks up in the last third of the game. And I mean that, like, there was like a couple levels where I was kind of like, eh. but, you know, the last like 3, 4, or 5 levels are the best levels of the game. for sure. It's just like, there's some 9 Inch Nails in there. stands out. Yeah, for
Black Keys are in there. Joy Formidable, a couple others. It's not a huge licensed soundtrack, but it's it is very distinct and very varied.
They use them for key moments. I guess I'll say like a lot of them are tied to like boss fights.
Yeah.
And those are, you know, big. And it's cool that that happens when you get to a boss and oh shit, it's Nine Inch Nails. like it just adds an extra bit of gravitas to it. Not that like the original music made for the game is bad by any means, because some of it is, it, you know, it varies from good to like very good. And it's just such a cool fucking game. It is so awesome.
Well, it's, you know, sitting at $29.99 or available on Game Pass. What are your thoughts?
Well, let me tell you, you know, it's on Game Pass. So if you subscribe to Game Pass, you can just play the game, which, you know, obviously we were incentivized to review it. But I'll tell you, like, if and when they release like a physical version of this game, like, I will buy that. I've already finished the game and I will buy it. I will spend money for it because I want to have it on my shelf. It is such a cool game. It is, you know, very early in the year. This is probably easily a top 10 game of the year for me. I can't imagine that there will be 10 better games this year than Hi-Fi Rush. It's awesome, and everyone needs to check it out. Get on that Game Pass. And yeah, it's because this is you know, Xbox Microsoft owned studio, it's not going to be going to other platforms. So, gotta play
it's
there.
On PC. So,
yeah, that is, you know, still counts. But it's, you know, you're not going to see it on PlayStation.
I wonder, is Steam Deck verified? Have you heard anything about that?
I have not. Probably. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
if it's on Steam, it'll play on the Steam Deck. I am sure of it.
Sweet. All right. Well, that is it for you, Tim.
Cool. All right.
Quick one tonight for you.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Lady, bye bye. Yeah.
Well, have a good night.
Right, do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think so. I was actually just before this, I started tonight playing the Atari 50 collection.
Sweet.
And despite the fact that like Chris gave it a glowing review, I still think he might have undersold how good that game is.
It has like, Ninja Golf. That's not underselling.
Yeah, it's just like, but like the whole presentation of it is just so good.
It is.
And it's so stellar. Well done. And the way that it's laid out and guides you from game to game. And, you know, I'm just going through the timelines and watching all the videos and reading all the stuff and looking at everything. Yeah, I don't
know. I'm actually considering buying the physical version myself, too, because... Mm-hmm. I think it would be cool on the shelf. Plus,
I think Switch has
a bit of a memory hog.
I think the Switch has a special version too. With like a
steelbook. It does have a steelbook. I got it off of GameFly because they had the PS4 version for $20. Oh, so cool. Nice. I was like, yeah, I'll jump on that. But yeah, they just make it so easy to engage with that stuff, and I don't know, it's really super cool and really well done.
Yeah, somebody like me who grew up on the NES, you know, we kind of need that because like that context makes it like it makes it click.
Yes. Yeah. Like I, you know, my dad had an Atari. Like we had an Atari. That was the first video game system I played. But you know, there's a whole story there that you don't get just by like, oh, this is in the house and these are the cartridges we have. Like, yeah, of course, Combat was the first game I played because every 2600 came with Combat during a certain period of time. And just like being like, oh, they have Outlaw on here. We had Outlaw. I played Outlaw. Like, you know, and I realized like, oh man, this weekend I'm going to, you know, play some Atari games with my kid, just like I played with my dad. And that's going to be a fuzzy, warm nostalgia thing.
Nice.
And he's probably going to be like, why are we playing these horrible looking games? Why can't we just play something better?
Can we play PS5?
I think he'll get a kick out of Outlaw and Combat because it involves just shooting, unless I start whooping his ass and then it won't be as fun.
I mean, with Combat, you can always do the stages with the bouncy bullets. Those are always fun.
We'll just do the invisible tank ones, and he'll just be so mad.
Oh, I was going to say, is that the one? I think it's the modern one, but one of the tank games where you got like the four tanks that are shooting each other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those little modernized games they made are so cool.
Yeah, like and one of them unlocks another game.
Oh, yeah, like that vector game that like switches between like four different game modes is like so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some really there's some really cool shit on there. People should not sleep on it.
So Atari 50 for $19.99. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely, I bought it and I feel great about it.
Yeah.
All right. Good night.
Take it easy, Tim. Good night. All right, moving on. Next game is Risen, developed by Piranha Bytes, published by THQ Nordic, released January 24th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $29.99. Delve into the gritty and atmospheric world of Risen, where every action has a consequence. Master the sword, learn the art of the staff fighting, or become a powerful mage, forging your path across a land filled with mysterious earthquakes, fearsome monsters, and unimaginable treasures. Chris and Jacob, both of you played this one. Who wants to start?
I could start.
I mean, Chris has hopefully got farther in the game than I did.
So. Well, it's an open world, so that's very subjective.
God.
I don't mind. I don't mind starting. Okay, so Risen is a game from the 360 era. An era of open world RPGs that are very near and dear to my heart because... like, this is the time when everybody else was playing Oblivion, I was playing Two Worlds. And, you know, like, when everybody... like, when I was done with Morrowind, I would move on to, like, Arx Fatalis, which is also kind of a, you know, just the one that nobody played on the original Xbox. So, like, it's one of those things that, like, they tend to come out around the time that Elder Scrolls comes out with something. And, you know, with like Two Worlds and stuff, it's clearly not as good as anything else, you know, Bethesda could put out. But like this being from that era, when I started it up, I was seeing like the old 3D models, the old stretchy textures, and like, you know, just that I was like, oh man, this is going to be like a goofy good time with.
Well, let's point out first off, this is not a remake. This is not a remaster. For the people out there who aren't aware of this, like this is not enhanced. It's not a special edition. It is a port.
Yeah, it is a 360 game. I'm sorry if I said otherwise. Anyway, I was expecting like this, you know, goofy good time sort of thing, like Two Worlds and stuff, to like really kind of draw me in, and I could laugh at like the, you know, the awkward character movements, voice acting, whatnot. However, I started getting into it, and I realized, oh wait, this game was actually made with care by people who actually like know what they're doing. This is from the developers of the first two Gothic games, apparently, which were very, if not popular, at least well regarded. And this kind of follows like in that in the same kind of style of those. It's open, but you know, it's more like. It's not like totally open like a sandbox. It's more like, you know, you're picking a path. And you're free to go anywhere, but if you want to succeed, you have to kind of follow along certain, you know, invisible paths to get to where you're going, which, you know, lends it a kind of structure, which I like.
Meanwhile, I actually hate that kind of structure.
Oh.
Because... all I did in this game is just get mauled by animals. Like, literally, that's all that happened to me.
That's what happened.
I don't know where the fuck this, like, invisible path is, because all paths lead to doom and Jacob's, like, you know, eventual mauling. So
all paths lead to getting mauled by a warthog on a farm.
Like, so. Yo, like, for real, like, and, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, like, you know, how if Elder Scrolls is doing something at that time, other ones are, you know, there's similar titles out there too.
Yeah.
I honestly haven't been this fucking lost in an RPG since Morrowind.
Huh.
That was my thought, like, as I was, like, playing it, because I was just like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I don't know where I'm going. All I'm doing is just getting attacked by random shit. Like,
well. In that case, allow me to help a little bit. So, you know, there's, you might have just gone the wrong way down a path, because like the first town is not too far away, and plus you can actually ask people to help you get to the town. I had to ask the same guy as he tried to drop me off on the path like three different times. I was like, hey, go with me a little further. Okay, yeah, now lead me all the way over there. Yeah, just bring me right up against this door, thank you. You know, he would fight off the not kidding here, giant killer moths that were,
oh wow, I didn't see those.
They were, yeah, well, you get to a farm first and they kind of explain what's going on, and then from there you can get an escort to it. Not an escort, you know what I mean, though. You can get a farmer to like lead you to the town, and then once you buy off the town guard, you can get into the town, and that's where it goes from being like you can go anywhere but get killed to now you're here in town and you can choose the path for the rest of the game. So once you get into town, and here's the cool thing about this, like versus something that would be made like, you know, nowadays, is that there are no quest markers. You don't even like really, like you get to get like right up on a person to like even get their name. But people are talking about other people like all the time. Like you basically have to kind of take notes. And
yeah, this is a very old school game. It doesn't have a lot of modern amenities that you would expect.
Exactly. So, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, so the what you kind of in a little bit more of an organic way, it's not like you walk into a room and there's three like, you know, people in there, it's like talk to one of these people to decide what your job is. It's more like you kind of get into hearing people's stories and hearing like their experiences and stuff, and that will push you in the direction towards a person who will then kind of encourage you to join these factions. And the factions all are kind of like, you know, as soon as you make a friend, you've made two enemies, you know? So, like, you can kind of basically stick with the, like, common man type of dudes that are a little bit shady and eventually join, like, the bandits. And the bandits is actually your fighter's guild in this. And that's, you know, where you're going to learn, like, how to do the sword and shield stuff and, like, raise your strength and all this other everything. And then, you know, if you, like, kind of go along the path of learning, even though they're all like, you know, they're like, oh, these people are terrible, they're kidnapping people and changing their brains and stuff like that. Like, once you kind of learn the other side of the story, you find out that that's like just a bunch of kind of superstition, and what you're really doing is kind of joining the Mage's Guild and learning magic, and that's like the way that you're going to learn like all your magic stuff. Once you choose one path, that will lock away the best trainers and the best like items from the other path. So if you choose to like kind of go along with the mages, you're going to get pushed into the ultimate like magic power, but you're going to be locked away from like getting the best sword training or anything like that. So like you do have some choices. And that's the thing that I found out about this game, is that it's all about getting to know people, because unlike any other like Western RPG that I've played, you cannot on your own, you can gain levels all day, right? But you cannot spend your skill points on the skill tree. You have to get it trained by another person. So you have to find the right person. They have to be affiliated with something you're affiliated with, or, you know, like you have to be on friendly terms with them. And through conversation, you ask them to teach you this thing. And then it always costs like some amount of gold and then some amount of learning points. And you get the learning points from leveling up. You don't get the gold, so you got to find the gold. And so it's all about like kind of funding your character's growth. And you do that not so much through selling, like, you know, picking up junk off the ground and selling it. Like a lot of it is quests, and then there's like quests that lead to other quests, and then they like intertwine. Like it's really complex, considering that, like I said, you know, the thing that was out at the time was Oblivion. And I mean, it's complex for an Elder Scrolls game, but it largely is just, you know, you know, pick up stuff off the ground and sell it, and then, you know, buy some cheaty thing, and then, you know, do the Elder Scrolls thing, essentially. I didn't want to dwell too much on the Elder Scrolls stuff. So, but yeah, once you, like, actually start building your character, then, yeah, specifically the way this game was designed is that they did put super strong, like, enemies in the path that you're not supposed to go yet.
Yeah, so if, like, if you wander off the beaten path, you will get your ass handed to you, Jacob. Yes.
All right. I don't understand how it was off the path when I wash up on a friggin' beach and it's literally like the only path for me to go. And it's just some abandoned farmhouse. And I get chased in there by like these two like giant chicken things. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, fuck those things. All right. So it's just like I'm like running into this thing and I'm like, oh, good. Like, you know, at least I can like duck into this room and like get out there. Like on the other side of the house is a friggin' wolf, like literally just waiting for me. And I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? And like, and this was just constantly my experience with this game. I don't know. As I said, I don't know what the invisible path is, but I want a strategy guide. I want my Brady games or Prima strategy guide that, you know, you buy for an extra $10 at GameStop when you buy the game as well. Like, because this is one of those games where you need that.
Yeah, this is definitely a game where you need a guide.
Did you happen to pick up the stick off the beach? Because that's a weapon.
Yeah, I did, and it didn't apparently do anything because, like, the game also doesn't give you any instructions on like what does what.
No, it doesn't. Oh, it's
you push. Yeah, you push the L shoulder button, and then that takes the stick out, and you just press A. You don't have a stamina bar or anything, so you can just wail on all the enemies until, you know. And you push B to block if you're a wimp. I just beat up those chickens and that wolf, man, and I made it to the farm, so.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out the combat for the game.
It's old like, there's school literally in a lot like of ways.
No
to its like, detriment at some points. It's definitely old school.
Yeah, it definitely is.
It has charm though. If you can get used to the game, if you can let it get its hooks into you, and you can deal with the, as it's so lovingly called, Eurojank. if you can deal with it, I've always enjoyed the Risen series. My hang up though is that it's $30, and on at least on the Xbox, you can buy the 360 version of the game for $20 and play it via backward compatibility.
You could get the original version for $5 because it's on sale at least once a month.
Okay, well, normal price is $20, so I'm going off of the normal price.
All right, fair enough. I mean, but as I said, this thing is on sale at least once a month on the Xbox store, along with Risen 2. Risen 3
is not backward compatible.
Well, yeah, but it's also not always on sale like the other two.
Yeah, but it's not playable anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Well, I don't know. It's on sale like every 3 months, but so.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm super annoyed that Risen 1 and 2 are backward compatible and Risen 3 is not.
I play Nintendo. Nothing's backwards compatible.
Oh, man. All right. Well, this one's $30. Chris, what do you think?
Well, I mean, given its age, then $30 is a little bit of a steep ask. But, you know, if you're a stalwart Switch enjoyer, then you know that this stuff always goes on sale. So if the price is a detriment, then, you know, I would say at $30, I'm going to put this in the try it category because, I mean, Two Worlds and Two Worlds 2 are like $1.99 each, I think. And I got lots of hours out of Two Worlds. But, yeah, I mean, it's real good, though, and I really want people to, like, try this one. So I'm going to say spiritually I'm giving it a buy it, but, you know, I do recognize that, yeah, Nintendo tax. And I will say, though, that, you know, and it would be really rude of me to say otherwise, but it does perform well on the Switch, this game from 20 years ago or whatever.
Jacob, what are your thoughts?
I mean,
never mind. We won't ask.
No. Like, I did not have a fun time with this game at all, obviously. But I'm still going to pop it over into the, you know, try it category. If your idea of a good time with an RPG is something along the lines of, like, you know, Morrowind from way back in the day, go for it.
Morrowind is very hard. If you like, if you go directly to it from Skyrim, it's very hard.
No.
I went directly to it with nothing. So like it was like, I bought it when I was in college and I was immediately like, oh, I'll be a reptile guy. Huh. And then
I went to it from having played Daggerfall for like ever. And I was like, oh, this is nice and a nice breezy version of what I'm used to.
But So if you're looking for something like that, by all means, check it out. If your idea of a good time with like an RPG is something like the original Fable, Mass Effect, where you're expecting more of like an action RPG along those lines, where it's also still going to hold your hand, then no, avoid this. But if you're, as I said, Morrowind, if you're looking for something like that, then sign yourself up for it.
Cool. And if you are interested in future games, I have a feeling that they're going to bring at least Risen 2, possibly Risen 3 re-releases, because this game is called Risen 1 on the store.
Yeah.
It says Risen, just Risen on my on the actual Switch. I didn't catch that it was.
Yeah, on the Xbox One store, it's just labeled as Risen 1.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, well, on the Switch, they're just calling it Risen.
Yeah, so I have a feeling we'll see more of them if this one does well. But, Jacob, that's it for you. You sticking around or are you heading out?
I'm heading out.
You punk.
Bye-bye.
Do you have any final words?
Oh.
I miss Purnell.
Aw.
He's here. Too.
Supposedly.
Yeah, you could literally just say, hey, how's it going? And I would go, adequately. And then you'd go, oh, penis or something. That's what you like to say for some reason. And then we'd all be happy because it's Jacob. Jacob's a good person, except when he's late by 3 minutes. But otherwise, you're great.
Thanks, Purnell.
No, the problem, sir.
Chris, you're all right.
Aw, well, thanks. You too.
Joe, you can go eat a bag of dicks.
Too late, you ate it.
In this economy?
And I didn't leave you any leftovers.
He didn't.
That's right.
In a
whole bag.
Sounds like you left them one leftover. There's one dick left.
It's a just giant one bag dick of named dick, Jacob.
All right. Roll. Have a good night, guys.
All right. Later.
Have a good night, man.
We have risen to buy this game. Nice, Thimber.
Good lord. All right. Next game, Neptunia Sisters versus Sisters, developed by Idea Factory and Compile Heart, published by Idea Factory International, released January 24th on PS4, PS5, and Steam for $49.99. With game industry on the brink of destruction, Nepgear and the candidates must band together and restore order. Purnell and Chris, both of you played this. Purnell, how about you start off since we haven't heard from you yet?
Alrighty. So in this game, you play initially as the goddesses, but very quickly, the goddesses of game industry, but very quickly something takes a turn. Time passes in the form of 2 years, and then you find out that, surprise, you're actually playing the game as the goddess candidates for probably the first time, where they are the main characters of the game. For those who are not in the know, game industry is a world that's meant to represent video game consoles.
It's though, like one word.
Specifically video game, game industry, it's like, yes.
Game industry.
Kingdom industry. And it also is meant to represent the world of games circa PS3, Xbox 360, Nintendo Wii. It is interesting how that plays out because it actually works that way in the way the narrative plays out too. And then the goddess candidates are meant to be later versions of consoles. So, for example, Neptunia is meant to be a non-existent Sega console, but Netgear is meant to be like the non-existent portable Game Gear equivalent to that non-existent Sega console, like the Sega Neptune.
Now we get it.
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of jokes like that. Because remember, I want to say
I got all the other jokes. I didn't get Netgear's. Okay, thank you.
Sure. And then like I like how ROM and RAM. It took me a second to get them, but they're meant to represent the Nintendo DS because they're both. There's two of them, one for each screen. That's gotcha. Just weird stuff like that.
They're like portables.
So, yeah, they're the portable twins. It's like honestly, the best part about this, the franchise, in my opinion, is the humor and just the way they wrote lore for all the characters. Like, did you get the reference for the villain? The primary villain that they showed throughout much of the game.
It depends on which one.
R4?
Like, oh, yeah, R4, yes, I do know. Yeah, R4. R4 is in other games, though, right?
Yeah, that's what makes it funny. Like, in this modern age, most people have no idea what that represents anymore, but when it came out, she was meant to represent the flash card on Nintendo DS.
Yeah, I had an Easy Flash 5 myself, but yeah, everybody had an R4.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were broke.
Here to that. And so if you could probably tell by now, Chris and I are really big fans of the humor concept of this game, because it does lean in well to video game lore and just like the industry as a whole, hence game industry. But due to the nature of how things played out in the time you were not available, quote unquote, the world is kind of in a bit of a shock, because similar to how the console wars worked out back in the day, the power of the goddesses that represent this country are represented by their shares or popularity within game industry. So if Nintendo's not popular in their actual country, and they're not very powerful, get it? Wink, wink, shares. So as a result, a mysterious new force has taken over game industry, and it is up to Netgear and the other candidates to try to right things by figuring out what's going on, retrieve the shares, and just ultimately also figure out whatever happened to the one of the goddesses, who I won't say who, and of course figure out how to help the other three that are still present. Gameplay in this game, I got mixed. Also, action RPG, whereas most of the other games, with the exception of something like Virtual Stars, were originally like turn-based RPGs. Also, I guess Hyper Devotion Noir was a tactical RPG, but this is probably the second that I can recall that isn't like the freaking ninja game or whatever that is action-based. And it maintains much of what was good about the combat of the original turn-based games, being that you have break attacks, which are meant to like take down guards. You have like the power attacks, which are meant to do heavy damage. And then you have like whatever the blue ones were called, which are meant to like just do hyper combos and build your tactical gauge quicker, which in this game is meant to be how you use items and use special attacks. But for some reason, I wonder if you felt the same, Chris, something about like the pacing of the attacks and the dodges and the guards felt slightly off. Like, it might have come from being a guy that plays a lot of ease games, but it wasn't as snappy as I would have liked.
So here's actually where the game really shone for me, because I'm actually used to this, because this is almost, I would say it's like 90% the battle system for Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, which...
Oh, that makes sense. That was also if...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's Idea Factory and Compile Heart. And I put like 120 hours into that game, so it was very familiar to me. It's like it's a combination of action and turn-based, in that you are still selecting stuff from a menu, but yeah, there's a little bit of a delay, and, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, you also have the transformation stuff that you can do, which is, you know, again, like that, and it's kind of hard to tell what's going on sometimes, but I kind of just I was flowing with it instinctively, because it was a system I was already used to. So,
well, that's actually really good to hear then, yeah, because I can tell you right now, I was only familiar in the sense that I've played action RPGs, but not, yeah, like it's the way this system works.
Yeah, it's not straight up action. It's just like it's close to it, but you're still selecting attacks, and then, you know, they utilize the, it's like doing, it's like selecting attacks, but with active time. That is to say, like, the enemy can still attack you while you're doing your thing, but you're still doing your thing.
And also, we should probably point out that he's saying select attacks, but with the exception of your tactical skills and items, the way attacking works is you have an AP gauge, and over time, it will just kind of build up to a certain number. And you can equip up to 4 different attacks that fit within the break, power, and I guess speed, I'll call it, attack styles. Yeah. And for each one of those you use within a sequence, you'll use AP to use them. So let's say, for example, you want to use the 4th attack in the string. You need to have enough AP to get through all 3 previous attacks and then get to the 4th in the combo.
Yeah, then, which is... Oh, go ahead.
It's okay. But then at the end of that, if you haven't had your combo broken yet, they have something that you can do where you can press either the right or left bumper, and you can switch to one of the other party members to do a combo chain extend, which will then let that character come in, do a new attack, and then you'll continue to beat up on the guy. You can just kind of juggle those things around. But
yeah,
so that stuff feels pretty nice, like when you can get a chain rolling. But if you need to dodge and block, prepare yourself for a little delay. And that can get weird. But, and of course, goddess changing, or rather goddess transformations, are still back. Like Chris mentioned earlier, there's another gauge that represents that. And when you fill it, every goddess, or in this case, goddess candidate, has an alter ego form that is essentially a souped up, hyper-powered version of themselves. And while you transform into your goddess form, you pretty much dash around the board. You can use a bunch of like super of your normal powered attacks without worrying about your gauge or timing. And if you can use the two buttons, left trigger and right trigger, before your timer runs up, you can do an ultimate attack that does a ridiculous amount of damage as well.
Oh, yeah. Which is, and basically, like I said, it's 90% what's already in, you know, Fairy Fencer, F, Advent, Dark Force. So, like, yeah, it's like I'm kind of glazing over it because I'm like, I'm so used to it that I forget that you have to slow down and, like, really explain this stuff because it isn't like any other game. It's just like that one game I've played a lot.
And that's a good deal. Honestly, it sounds like you already loved the game then, because if you've gotten it, you are a big fan of Fairy Fencer or Fairy Fencer F.
Yeah, so. As soon as I recognized that gameplay aspect of it, I was like, oh, this is going to be like my favorite one, I think.
So there's like a little bit like a half and half dimension for this game. So I think it's easy to say that if you're a fan of Neptunia games in general, then you will probably be a fan of this, because I felt that the writing was probably some of the best they've had in the franchise. It may have helped that Neptunia... Oh, crap, I guess I kind of gave that away, but it's the first hour of the game, who cares? It may have helped that Neptunia wasn't mainly present, and she might be the one character in the franchise that drives me bonkers half the time, I'm a big fan of Nep Gear and her interactions with everybody. So that may have lent itself to things, but I was a big fan of the writing and the characters in this game. And I also found it funny that they introduced two characters representative of two PC franchises, one of which, when I went to look it up, surprised the hell out of me, and now I want to play it because it's based off of a horror franchise called like Higurashi, like Find Lead Your Way or Go Your Own Way or something like that.
Oh, nice.
But a very unexpected tie into this game, and the other being a Toho character. But so the story and the characters and all that, I think they're on point. As far as the environments go, that is where it gets a little rough. Because, again, if you're already down with Neptune games and you've been playing them this long, you already know what you're getting here. Very, like, you know, recycled, not too exciting areas to explore and run around in. Like, run straight ahead. Here's a chamber zone. Okay, you beat the guys there and go down one of the pathways to another chamber zone. There might be a river in the middle or a pathway that blocks two corridors. You gotta go around. So nothing very exciting about that. It's like it feels like you're still playing a PS3 game at that point. And that to me knocks it pretty badly. But I will say that despite my concerns and issues, I don't want it to sound like I didn't enjoy anything this game had to offer, because like I said, the writing was fun, the combat, it has its issues, but I had moments where I enjoyed that as well. Though I will also say you could probably sleep through some of the attack selections here and there and still pretty much do well as long as you just watch your butt. And we didn't even mention things like the combo, like the disc maker and the ridiculous thing that is Chirper, which is meant to be a Twitter parody. But I can't understand. It's such a weird thing. But I rambled a lot about this so far. What are your thoughts aside from like you already mentioned before?
Yeah, well, really, I mean, pretty much all that you said. But you know, just to kind of piggyback off that a little bit. So yeah, this game is, like I said, it's like one of my, it is like my favorite Compile Heart Idea Factory game is Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force. And it's like the first one I played too, which is kind of great. But like, you know, it's got its strengths and it's got the same weaknesses. And the weaknesses are going to become very apparent when you're playing on like a newer system like a PS5. Especially considering that, you know, they've polished it up enough now where, so the writing and the story are good, but the presentation of that is visual novel style. So all of the story sequences, it's not you see the characters like doing stuff and like interacting with the world at all. They're always standing on the left and right of the screen, talking to each other, you know, the voice acting. They're kind of like VTubers in that sense. It's like they kind of move a little and like the mouth moves, but there's, you know, nobody raises a hand in these things. And, you know, this game adds a layer to that. Like, you know, they usually will just have, like, the mouth moving and the character will just be a portrait. But in this one, they're 3D models and they actually are kind of moving, but they're not moving because they're just talking to each other. Like, that's the whole presentation of the story. So, you know, Final Fantasy, this ain't. It's, you know, it's bare bones in that term. It's two characters talking against a background, like a visual novel type style thing. Same thing with the dungeons. There's no overworld, really. There's a map, and there are levels to select. And like Purnell said, it's, you know, corridor based, and like there's enemies on the map, and so you can kind of avoid them if you want to, or you can attack them for like a early advantage. But then, you know, it goes into the battle system and stuff. So like it's, you know, not heavy on like the exploration or anything like that. It's like all of these are things that they just didn't put into the early games, and it's just kind of continued as a tradition. But having said, like, the parts that are there are done really well. So, like, I really enjoy the combat loop. I like the writing. I like the characters. The voice acting is even really good. It's just that, like, yeah, you know, you're looking at backgrounds and you're checking out kind of like the same, you know, corridors on a map. And, you know, just kind of repeat until the story happens, you know. And, you know, there are some extra aspects in this one. But, you know, again, at its bones, this is like a game that, you know, like I said, like Purnell said, is like largely lived on like the PS3 era and stuff like that. So that's something to just know about this particular game.
Yeah, I feel like that's what makes it the hardest scenario there, because I know, because Joe's, I'm sure he's itching for the give it, because we talked for like 5 minutes. But in
he thinks it was five.
But whatever about the title was, I'm sure it was too long. But when it comes, like, you might feel, part of me feels like I almost like want to say something that can, like, yeah, I don't know if I want to go about recommending this in a sense, because there are things I wish that they would do to improve this franchise and bump it up a notch. But at the same time, I also know this is Idea Factory. This is what they literally do. This is their thing.
They ain't gonna do anything else but this. Yeah,
exactly. So. And what they do, I mean, they know their craft, they know what they're working with, and what they work with, they're already good at it. I mean, it could be better, but they know what they work with. And with that in mind, what it ends up coming down to is that I personally feel like this game is a serviceable time. Like, it's not going to knock your socks off or anything like that. But if you are a person who plays Neptunia games, and you may be coming off of this from something like Reverse or something, and you might have skipped Virtual Stars, maybe if you skip this, especially because they kind of act like they don't know who VTubers are, despite the fact that that game was all about VTubers, but I digress. I feel like you'll be in a better place coming into this if you came off of something like Reverse. So I can give it a try for people who aren't fans of Neptunia or haven't played one, with an ultimate premise to say, go back and play Reverse before you play this. And if you're a Neptunia player, I feel like this is a buy it in that sense, because this is probably one of the better Neptunia games they've put out in a while.
Nice.
Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, honestly, I was going to say buy it all around, but I'm like, you know, I kind of get that, you know, because, again, I'm a PS5 owner now. Actually, this is literally my first PS5 game. But, you know, like, we've all grown up and moved on to, like, the bigger and better giant white towers of gaming and stuff, so maybe we have to be more particular. So I guess, yeah, for general RPG fans who are expecting, like, you know, a big cinematic kind of experience and stuff, then I would say, yeah, try it or, you know, look away. But yeah, if you're a fan of Compile Heart Idea Factory stuff, you probably already own this. Yeah. But you know, there's not anything I'm going to say to dissuade you or persuade you, but I like it a lot as a fan of the one specific game that's also almost exactly like this. It's not as good as that, because that other one has Fang, and Fang is the best.
It's almost like saying, hey, if you guys are listening to this, make another damn Fairy Fencer F game for this guy. What's more?
They only ever took two characters out of that game and put them in a Japan-only dating sim as guest characters. Oh, anyway.
Fairy Fencer G.
So I'm going to say... alphabet. I'm going to say, if you heard this and it sounds like, oh, that's not a problem, then yeah, buy it. But everybody else, try it. At least check it out.
All right. Sounds good. Moving on. Next game is Heirs of the Kings, developed by Xcreate, published by Kemco, released February 3rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows 10, and Steam for $14.99. When Laura, a girl who has lost her memory, is being pursued by unknown soldiers, Grant enters in action to protect her, only to find out about the danger the world is in from the forces of darkness, and sets off on a journey. How can Laura use such high-level magic? This is a story of destiny and encounters between those with the blood of rulers in them. Chris, what is going on in Heirs of the Kings?
Oh, it sounds fancy, don't it? So speaking of, so three RPGs in a row based on, like, you know, stuff from, you know, 12 years ago. This is actually a 2017 Chemco / X-Create jam. Those of you who have been on, who have listened to the show quite a bit, have probably heard me talk about 10 or 20 of them by now. This is, yeah, it's got a couple things going for it, but, you know, honestly, if you're looking to end this podcast early, it's a Chemco X-Create game in pretty much every way. So there you go.
Well, I mean, there is one more review, so you don't want to check out yet.
Yeah. No, you got to stick around for the other review. You can just fast forward past this one.
Yeah, look at the timestamps.
Even higher by listening to it at 200x. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. So yeah, you do play as Grant. He is a male protagonist, believe it or not. What I love about this particular game is that you go from your one character, your male protagonist, to your full party in less than 20 minutes.
Oh, geez.
Of average game time. Yeah, this game, usually they'll give you the one character, the deuteragonist, who is always a girl, and she's almost always a love interest. They actually send you two girls this time, so which one's the love interest, or is it both? Who knows? If it was both, I would be mentioning that. But, yeah, you do come across two other characters, and then your fourth character joins, like, right as soon as you're done with the first dungeon, which is does not take very long. The art style of it is absolutely Chemco X Create. You'll recognize it if you've played anything like, you know, Alvastia Chronicles, As Divine, whatever's, and, you know, Alphadia. Not Alphadia, actually. Alphadia is a little different. But, anyways, you know, don't need to say much about that. I will say, because this is one of the ones from 6 years ago, that it does not have the smooth scrolling, you know, backgrounds and stuff like that. This one actually does run kind of choppy, like the older ones do, like the first ones on the 3DS and, you know, early Switch. So it's not even on the good looking side of, you know, what are generally considered the most samey looking RPGs in existence. So that, a warning there. Now, it does have a lot of the usual amenities of, like, the Chemco X Create things of the time. So it's got, for instance, swords eating swords. You can improve your sword by absorbing other swords into it and making it slightly stronger, or attaching status effects and things like that to it. Your characters level up, but it's actually a little different this time. When you actually level up, they give you what is essentially a simplified version of the Final Fantasy X sphere grid. You get to move a little chess piece around a board, and then as you move over pieces, they unlock and add to your stats. And then you are eventually leading your piece to skills, and that's how you add new skills to your party. The game does have the lottery system, and it does start you off with 1,000 points. Traditionally, when I get these games, I spend all 1,000 points on 11 turns on the wheel, and I unlocked end game weapons for all four of my characters within 30 seconds of playing this game. So that's a thing you can do. And yeah, like I said, the storyline, it's very, you know, boy meets girl and girl and other guy, and they go on an adventure. They actually lay out the MacGuffins for you, like, right away as well. Just like, well, you need to find this stuff and this stuff. And then there's a little bit of a thing about, like, different races that have rulers who all conveniently have children who are now in the same party. Although some of them are secret. But this is one of those games that, like, actually, like, pokes you with an elbow whenever it has a secret. And it's like, hey, there's a secret, okay? Mm-hmm. So this game really does broadcast its little plot twists and stuff. Having said, it's fun. The music, as usual, fantastic. I really wish that more of these games had their soundtracks available outside of, you know, one person on YouTube that sometimes uploads them. But yeah, music's fantastic. I like the sprite work. The enemies look really great. It is a functional mobile RPG that will look very familiar. It doesn't do much that's new. Like, literally the only other thing I can say that this game has done, or that this game does that I haven't seen in a while is a J-rock anime, not even an anime, just a vocal like rock out like intro song. Like it sings at you for the beginning, and that's not usual, but it nice. It has happened before. But yeah, that's all there is to say really about Heirs of the King.
Yeah, well, it's $15. What do you think?
As usual, it's a good time for $15. I mean, for an RPG that's probably going to be about 20-25 hours for you. Like I said, unless you unlock end game weapons right at the beginning and don't turn up the difficulty, it'll probably be even faster. But, you know, I like playing these games. I don't usually beat them, but I have beaten a couple of them. And, you know, for an RPG junkie, they're a good fix. But, you know, for folks looking for a little bit more quality, which $15 can kind of get you nowadays, I mean, you're $10 away from Chained Echoes already, so yeah. You know what to do.
Yeah, Chained Echoes.
But no, I'm going to say, for in the context of Kemco X Create games, I'm going to say it's a try it because it's older, and it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't lock in that frame rate and look as smooth as like even the games that are cheaper than that nowadays. Yeah. So it's for the fans.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight that is called Active DBG Braves Rage, developed by ISVR, published by Astrolabe Games, released February 2nd on Switch, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Braves Rage is an active time roguelite deck building game. Our unique active time card battle system allows players to activate bullet time, find the perfect timing to attack or block, and follow up with powerful combos to deal with any situation they encounter during the adventure. Choose your Braves, recruit your teammates, construct your deck, and defeat some of the most fearful foes to save the princess. Brunel, tell us about your time with Braves Rage.
Rage is a game that I saw originally on the eShop in the preview section, and the idea of an active deck builder seemed odd to me, but it also intrigued me enough to hopefully get a pre-review copy, and was fortunate enough to be able to do so. And what I came away with from the experience is a weirdly mixed bag, but one that also has me kind of filled with a bit of hope, too. So the idea behind this game is that the princess of the land has been kidnapped. She's gone. And the king's like, hey, could you brave heroes go out and rescue her for me? In which case, you are then tasked with playing through a campaign and rescuing her. With this campaign, however, you have to go through a series of very challenging maps. Challenging because, well, the game is challenging, but also because you're coming into this with a very new concept of how deck building can work in the game. Starting off, you choose one character. They start you with a default one, but as you play and progress, you'll unlock more, which is what's going to result in the fact that you're choosing a character. And each character that you choose from determines the sort of cards that will eventually start to populate your deck, because they bring cards with them to the party. Now, the characters themselves, which is where it gets weird, when you eventually get more characters in your party by way of finding taverns and hiring them on the map, you're not limited to using cards specifically for that character. It's a shared deck. However, the thing that makes you want to choose who uses what cards is due to the fact that each character has a max attack, basically like a super move, and the only way you can do it is by activating three skills that match the attack type that they're synergized with. So one character might be really good with red strike cards, so use three strike attacks, which is basically three fills of your AT gauge, use them, and then boom, now you can do your super move. Now, in addition to that, in the case, unlike a lot of other deck builder games, it's not as simple as just using an attack. Because, again, this game involves ATB, made famous by the Final Fantasy series, Active Time Battles. When you go into a skirmish, the enemies and yourselves have life bars, positions on the map, and also an ATB gauge. When it maxes out, it kind of telegraphs what attack the enemy is going to do. They will perform it. If an enemy decides they want to rush up to you, they will eventually attack. However, if you have a defense ability at the ready and you have an ATB gauge charged up, you can hold down the right trigger and it goes, puts you into the aforementioned bullet time that Joe mentioned, and it allows you to kind of time a counter using the defense card in your deck. If you can time it at the right time, which the game does choreograph by having the enemy flash red, you'll potentially do like your counter ability, reduce your damage, and sometimes also produce an additional effect that's beneficial to you. And then aside from that,
You'll be using cards that let you attack enemies in the back row, cards that let you pull enemies closer to you so you can use an attack that will strike them in tandem. Sometimes you'll be able to attack enemies when they're next to each other, so you'll hit them at the same time with one attack. And also, in addition to the blocking, I also need to mention the fact that enemies that will strike you, say, for example, fire an arrow from, like, a back row or something.
Fucking yeah!
If you time an attack card properly that involves you making physical contact, you can actually make your character walk forward as the distance attack or, I guess, ranged attack is coming towards you so that you dodge it in that manner, too. So there's, like, a lot of weird timing elements and trying to perform, you know, adequate combos. You have some characters that can actually use multiple strikes in a row if they use the type of right type of card. There's a lot going on in these battles, despite the fact that it looks so simple.
You know what else is going on?
I don't know. Got biddies or something? Ooh, subs.
Yes, we got another sub. Javors just gifted a tier one sub to Famicore. We are up to 45 points. We are so close to, like, I'm legitimately excited that we are close to a new emote slot, because I never thought I would get that high.
I don't know what is. So is it like there's like a certain number of subs you have to get to unlock this thing?
Yes. Once you hit 50 points, you unlock a new emote slot so we can have another cat emote.
And which cat are you going to choose?
Jelly.
You got a lot. There you go. Jelly's a good cat.
Yeah. So anyway, Brave's Rage.
Brave's Rage is no Jelly. But so where was I with this thing? Oh, yeah. So in addition to there's like a weird number of weird elements that come into the way this combat works, though, which is where it makes me feel a little like dicey in regards to like how I feel about it. Like, I'm not against it, but I'm also not 100% for it yet, because while the game does allow you to pause the game, which should alleviate things for the most part, it still in my head makes me kind of go back and forth on like trying to get the right synergy of like when to pause, when to let it flow, because all the attacks you get in this game work just like you'd expect them to work in a deck builder, as in one attack has a lot of conditions associated with it. Gain a bunch of stacks, do a counter, but only in this condition. Combos well with this, has a certain number of uses before it goes away for the use. There's a lot going on, but you're also meant to be acting like you're playing like an active time battle Final Fantasy game. So you're trying to snap and get these card attacks out there. But instead of just like, I guess I'll just mash the attack button, hopefully, and succeed. And then when you're not paying attention, next thing you know, you got like four fatigue cards in your deck that make you, you know, delay attacks every time you use them, but you have to use them because they glut your hand. So it gets a little rough, but it is something that I want to do more with, because I like what they're doing here. I like that they're doing something different with deck building in that style of combat. And I didn't even get into the whole idea that the actual gameplay in and of itself involves you moving around a map, engaging in battles and events where you can spend money to buy characters from the tavern that you've unlocked to join your party, or new cards to add to your deck, things that let you, you know, thing your deck, modify your cards to become stronger, a variety of different things that you can come across via events on the board, ultimately culminating with you getting to the boss of the arena, hopefully killing him and moving on to the next region. And if you somehow manage to lose, you're going to lose a lot. That's just how the game's designed. The characters that you brought into combat with you will gain experience that will allow you to unlock additional features for that character, and ultimately also start to unlock new characters which you can use in future gameplay runs. There's a fair bit of content here, and there's also additional modes you can unlock by beating the game, which I did not. I'm not ashamed. The game is hard. But it is the sort of thing where I am glad to see that in a market that's kind of glutted with this style of game, there's a lot of deck builders now, thanks, Slay the Spire. I feel like this is one that is trying to do something of his own accord that feels different and unique just enough to have a place next to other games of this style. And also, I like the art style, too. It's a pretty interesting art style. But in the end, I would actually give this a high end try. I don't want to go by the straight buy it, because I still got this weirdness about it in my head about some people being like, I don't want to deal with having to make these decisions on the fly, despite there being a pause or also bullet time button. So, but a high end try it for me is if you like deck builders, you're looking for somebody that's trying something different, this is absolutely worth your time. And you may come away with an actual personal buy it of your own.
Cool beans. Sounds good.
It's Yes.
All right. Well, we are done. We made it through this episode. Huge thanks to you guys.
I've done three RPG reviews for one episode. I'm tired.
It gets you.
Yeah, but you did one with Jacob, so that counts as two alone.
That was extra time. No, I'm just kidding.
Because you had to carry his ass.
Well, I mean,
well, I got killed by boars.
And, yeah, I was gonna say he got murdered by chickens, and like, you know, was trying to put that on the game.
Well, Jacob, like, you had 2.5 weeks with the game. What'd you do? I died. All right. Well, music this episode, we are going to play some more Castlevania music because that Blood Curse album is really good. So we're going to play more stuff off of that. Big thanks to you two for being here. Big thanks to Tim for coming on, doing his thing. Big thanks to David Ventura for coming on and chatting with us, hanging out with us. I know he'll be back again soon. Love having him on. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Yes.
Those are the words.
No. Yes. I do have words.
I thought yes words. Was the final
I thought
words.
That was a joke.
No.
Okay, what are they?
Fuck that wizard child game. Trans rights are human rights.
That's a good number of words, but I like them.